Good afternoon, Tigers. At the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club's annual dinner in 2014, last February, former Senator Mike Fasano and current Pasco County tax collector was to have received the Ben Franklin Award. And that award was to have been presented by current County Commissioner Janet Long and current St. Petersburg Mayor Rick Kreisman. Unfortunately, Senator Fasano was ill and had to cancel his evening with us at the last minute. So we're going to do the presentation today. So though Commissioner Long and Mayor Kreisman each presented their introductions that evening, I would like to provide a summary today of that official presentation since Senator Fasano is with us here today and will be our keynote speaker. So the Ben Franklin Award is conferred upon an elected or public official who has exhibited extraordinary integrity, courage, and achievement, and who has consistently and profoundly influenced public policy in the state of Florida. Commissioner Long and I shared lunch a week ago, so she could help me compose some of this introduction and provide some of her perspective. Senator Fasano comes from some humble beginnings. As the youngest of five children, Fasano's father was a meat cutter in Long Island. His mother was an English war bride. In 1971, when Fasano was 13, his father was diagnosed with cancer, and hoping that the warm winters here in Florida would ease his suffering, the family moved to Pasco County. Fasano was first elected to the House of Representatives in November of 1994. During his tenure, he served as the majority whip, the majority floor leader, and the House majority leader. Fasano was then elected to the Florida president, the Florida Senate, from November 2002 to 2012, where he served as president pro tem of the Florida Senate, making him the top chief to then Senate President Jeff Atwater. Fasano has inspired strong feelings on both sides of the aisle. Widely admired by his Pasco constituents for his devotion to their needs, he's reviled by others as a grandstander. He once infuriated his fellow senators by offering a floor amendment to cut their salaries, knowing that they wouldn't be able to vote against it. Fasano was a vocal critic of Citizens Property Insurance Corporation. He was the only House Republican to vote for Medicaid expansion. He supported a well-funded prescription drug database. He publicly blasted a $500,000 severance package, which was handed to the state ousted top tourism executive as a sweetheart deal. He spoke out against District Court Judge Paul Hawks, who resigned to abort a trial over the Taj Mahal courthouse. He called the last-minute language creating Florida Polytech as irresponsible. He called for the legislature to investigate Duke Energy for the shuttered Crystal River nuclear plant. And during the 2012 legislative session, Senator Fasano paid the ultimate price and was removed from his chairmanship of the Budget Subcommittee on Criminal and Civil Justice Appropriations for his opposition to a plan to privatize 27 prisons in South Florida. Passage of that plan was the major goal of Governor Rick Scott and then Senate President Mike Haridopoulos. The prison privatization plan was defeated in the Florida Senate by a margin of 19 to 21, with Senator Fasano voting against that plan. Commissioner Long told me she's known you since the 80s, and that she noted that there were issues that the two of you might have disagreed on, but she said you were always respectful and gracious. She even indicated you sought her advice on insurance issues since Commissioner Long had served as the insurance commissioner for many years. Commissioner Long was also grateful for your support of her nomination to receive the Pacesetter Award for the Mental Health Board at the time. And Tiger Bay board member David Clement, who sought reappointment to the PSC, said that Mike Fasano was the only lawmaker to not walk out of a meeting to end the parliamentary tactic to end the hearing. So he asked me to share that with you. So while you were under consideration then for the appointment as the Pasco tax collector, you voiced your uncertainty with all of this, saying, I had some doubts whether I would be appointed because of my outspokenness. Kind of an understatement, I think. But Fasano had broad support for his appointment in the Pasco political structure, including House Speaker Will Weatherford. And on August 7th, 2013, Mike Fasano was appointed to the position of the Pasco County Tax Collector by Florida Governor Rick Scott. For your extraordinary integrity, courage to be independent of partisan politics, an achievement of consistently and profoundly influencing public policy in the state of Florida, it is my honor to present the Ben Franklin Award to Pasco County Tax Collector Mike Fasano. Not that he needs any further introduction, but since your appointment as a tax collector, we have had a gubernatorial election featuring the governor who appointed you and former Governor Charlie Crist. In October of 2014, you appeared in an ad to support Charlie Crist for governor. So by way of introducing you as our speaker today, Commissioner Janet Long would like to know if you plan to change your party affiliation in the near future. Please give a warm Tiger Bay welcome to former state senator and current Pasco County tax collector, Mike Fasano.
Thank you, Ann. And I guess that's one of my first questions, and the answer is no. I will not be switching my party. You know, I remember when I was about 15, 16 years old, after my dad passed away, I don't know if you know it or not, but after my dad passed away, I dropped out of high school to support my mom and I here in Pasco County, or up there in Pasco County. And it wasn't until I was 28 years old when I got my GED, I realized it was going nowhere fast. And believe it or not, for 10 years, from the time I was 18 years old to the time I was 28, I delivered what was then known as the St. Petersburg Times. I built up one of the largest distributions there in North Pinellas County in the Tarpon Springs area for 10 years, and ran for county commissioner in 1986, was not successful, and won the primary, but lost in a general election against a very well-funded, well-known county commissioner, Curtis Law, back then. And that's also when the Democrats in Pasco County were a very organized and had a lot more voters than Republicans did back then. Later on, I ran for the Florida House back in 1992. Didn't even win the primary at that point and thought my political career was pretty much ended. It was until 1994 that I ran for the Florida House again in an open seat that former State Representative John Long in Pasco County held, decided he wasn't going to run for re-election. And I think he also knew that Republicans were beginning to take control in the Florida legislature, because it was shortly after that Republicans did take control of the Senate and then the Florida House. And I ran for the Florida legislature in 1994, won that seat, held on to it for 8 years, ran in the state Senate, held on to that for 10 years. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I thought, you know, a buddy of mine named Richard Corcoran was going to be the Speaker of the House, and I thought, well, I'll go back to the House and stay there till he becomes Speaker, because it was always, you know, something that he and I talked about, that one day we would serve in the Florida legislature, never thinking that he would be Speaker, but always would. Then, of course, he became member of the Florida House and thought, boy, what a great opportunity to serve the same time a dear friend of mine was going to be Speaker of the House. So I ran and got elected and served about a year. And I guess you know the rest of the story. Governor Scott, through some encouragement by a few, I would imagine people like Duke Energy, Citizens, State Farm, Nationwide, and many more, along with people like Will Weatherford, who no longer wanted to have somebody on the floor of the House challenge the leadership, along with others who were going to be future leaders of the Florida House, encouraged Governor Scott to appoint me, which he did. I want to make it very clear there was no quid pro quo, never agreed to anything other than to be the best public servant I could possibly be as the tax collector of Pasco County. In fact, Cochran asked me shortly after that, do you want to come back to Tallahassee? I said, why? I'm making $140,000 a year and I can still stir the pot 250 miles away. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a terrific ride over those time, period of time. I had a great encouragement from probably one of the best moms anybody could have, who passed away a few years ago. Always encouraged me and my four siblings, I'm the youngest of five, to do what was best and to make certain that when you speak for the right reasons. I will tell you, it wasn't long that way in my political career. As a young Republican, I thought only one way. As a member of the Florida House and majority leader of the Florida House eventually, I was probably one of the meanest majority leaders the Florida House ever had. And I served under Tom Feeney. And it was all about doing what was the agenda of the speaker. And that's what you pretty much do as majority leader. When I walked into a committee room, people were literally, and I think Representative Long could appreciate this, were afraid of my thumb. Because if my thumb went up on the floor of the House or in committee, that means that the bill was going to pass. If my thumb came down, your bill was dead. Sadly, that's how it worked. And unfortunately, it continues to work that way in the Florida House today. It wasn't until I got to the Florida Senate and started to understand and appreciate the importance of hearing from the other side, of the importance of doing even better than what you were doing in putting your constituents first. And yes, those constituents happen to be who? Consumers of Duke Energy, consumers that pay property insurance premiums every month, as I describe them, the little guy and gal. And it wasn't until I got into the Florida Senate that I began to become more independent. I think I was, in some ways, in the Florida House before I left, because, as some of you know, I resigned as majority leader in my last year as majority leader because I did not like what was going on in leadership. And then when I got to the Florida Senate, became president pro tem of the Florida Senate, even then I challenged the leadership, President Atwater, who's a dear friend on issues. One of them, of course, was property insurance. I felt in my heart that the property insurance companies of the state were not only taking advantage of the people that were paying them premiums year after year after year, only to find out they would get a non-renewal notice in the mail. You see, in Florida, you cannot cancel someone's policy. No, you can't cancel their policy, but you can send them a non-renewal notice. You can raise their premiums to the point where they can no longer afford those premiums. And I saw my party at times, many times in fact, not put the consumer first, not put the ratepayer first, not put the small businessman and woman first. They instead put the guy or the gal in Tallahassee that can fund their campaigns and the parties to the highest degree. And unfortunately, we still see that. You know, a good friend, Dave, is here, who was, for a short period of time, a public service commissioner. And it tore me up when I watched what the Florida Senate did to him and another colleague, two gentlemen that were appointed by Charlie Crist, two gentlemen that had zero relationship with the utility industry in this state, were appointed by Governor Charlie Crist, who went up there and were honored to get that job, and they went up to Tallahassee and they did what they truly believed they should be doing, and that is looking out for the ratepayer. And what did they do? They did something wrong. They looked out for the ratepayer. They voted against a $1 billion rate increase that Florida Power and Light and Progress Energy, now Duke Energy, wanted. They voted against it. And when those two gentlemen came up to be approved by the Florida Senate, a former state senator named J.D. Alexander, who chaired the Ethics and Election Commission, wouldn't even allow their names to come up for a vote. That was one of the saddest days for me as a Florida legislator, to see that those two gentlemen that were appointed by the governor, and by the way, they're not only appointed by the governor. The only way the governor gets their names is through a legislative joint committee that sends the governor those names. But what happened? The lobbying force in Tallahassee convinced the senators they made a mistake. So their names were never brought up for a vote in the Senate committee, but they were eventually brought up on the Senate floor, and they were never confirmed. I never saw such a lobbying effort by the special interests, by those who control the Florida legislature, controls the Florida legislature in such a way to stop two people being confirmed. That doesn't even happen in Washington, D.C. But the big money prevailed. And that's unfortunately because it continues to happen that way in Tallahassee. Do you mind if I talk about Duke Energy? Anybody here from Duke? I didn't have my meal today because I wasn't sure who was cooking it. Duke is right across the street, so I didn't want to take any chances. But how is it possible that no one speaks out, although I'm very pleased to see that some of our new members of the Florida legislature, Republicans, are speaking out against Duke and against the Public Service Commission. In fact, bills were just filed yesterday and the day before to take on the Public Service Commission and to repeal the tax that was imposed back in 2006 to build two nuclear power plants that we know now, and we knew back years ago, they were never going to be built. It is great to see the freshmen, Republicans and Democrats, join together here in Pinellas County and in Pasco, filing legislation to do what is right. I texted one of those members this morning and I said, great job, great articles for a great cause. But I said, as a Republican, now you're in trouble. Amanda Murphy, who's the Democrat that filed the bill in the House, great person, by the way, and I was honored to be able to support her in her last election and the election before that, which began my downfall, probably. But I said, Amanda Murphy, she can walk away after session's over and say, you know, I couldn't get the bill passed because I'm in the minority party. Representative Long can understand and appreciate that. Just walk away. Not that Representative Long ever did that. But Amanda Murphy and any other Democrat can just walk away and say, I couldn't get it done because the Republicans control the Florida House. But I said, you and the other Republicans that have filed these great pieces of legislation can't do that. You have no excuse. The Republican leadership's feet to the fire. Force them, challenge them to do what is right for the consumer, for the ratepayer. Unfortunately, we have a governor that doesn't do that. Not one time during the entire election campaign did we hear from the Scott campaign about Duke Energy. Do you know how frustrating that is? How frustrating that has to be to the person who has to write that check out each month that their own governor says nothing about the rate increases, says nothing about the billing tactics, says nothing about the $3.8 billion that were paid to Duke by the consumers here in Pinellas County, in Pasco County, to build two nuclear power plants that are never going to be built. He was silent on the entire time on those issues. And whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you should care. And he could have cared less. My hope, my prayers, is to see these young people, these freshman members, but most importantly, freshman members of my party, to be filing this legislation. I think they have put leadership in Tallahassee, in the Florida House and the Florida Senate, but most definitely in the Florida House, in an awkward position. How about Medicaid expansion? $50 billion sits out there. $50 billion. And our governor says, well, I'm for it, and then goes and runs and hides and never mentions it again. Florida House Speaker Steve Crisafulli has already said he has no intentions of expanding Medicaid and has no intentions of taking the $50 billion. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, that $50 billion continues to shrink each year that we don't take the money and expand Medicaid. This state, for all whatever reasons, is the toughest state to get on Medicaid. But here was an opportunity to take people who don't qualify for Medicaid, who can't afford Obamacare, to be able to provide health care to a million people. My colleagues, including myself for 20 years, enjoyed and enjoy today full health care for $8 a month in the Florida House, and I think $30 a month in the Florida Senate, and free dental, no charge for dental. And they laugh. They laugh about expanding Medicaid and come up with, we can't take those dollars because it'll have an impact in Washington. You gotta be kidding me. An impact in Washington? If anybody believes that that $50 billion is going to balance the budget in Washington, D.C., they're not being honest with themselves and they're not being honest with the constituents they serve. Medicaid expansion. What I'm happy to see, though, is the chamber, the hospitals, other businesses have joined together and have come up with a plan. Don't allow the legislators to make an excuse that the expansion will not be accepted by Washington. Iowa, a Republican state pretty much as far as a governor and a legislator, has passed an expansion, have gotten the waivers to come up with an expansion plan that is different than what Washington wanted them to, but they got the waivers. I can give you a half dozen other states that have done the same thing, that have requested a waiver so they can implement an expansion and accept the dollars that are being offered to them. Hello, Tallahassee. We are a donor state. For every dollar you and I send to Washington, D.C., we get less than a dollar back, whether it be on Medicaid, whether it be on transportation, education, the list goes on. We get less than a dollar back. So when Washington offers us $2.5 billion for a train that'll go from here to Orlando to expand Medicaid to be able to provide services to 800 to a million people in our state, grab it and tell them it's just a down payment of what they already owe us. I better start taking some questions here, huh? Yes, ma'am. Wait for the microphone, and don't let that bell ring.
Helen Briley, we know that
the what bill? I'm sorry.
The recovery bill.
Yes.
Passed.
Yes, ma'am.
What's in there?
He was, in fact.
And might I ask what you
The bill passed almost unanimously. I passed the bill. I voted for the bill. The bill back then was a bigger bill with a small amendment that was adopted in committee. So we did not see the entire version of that bill. However, it was the Duke Energies of the world and the Progress Energies and the Florida Power and Lights that told us that this was needed because nuclear power was going to be needed in the future because our state was growing and that we were going to need this energy. But they also told us something else. They told us that the cost would be approximately $6 billion, not $21 or $22 billion 6 years later. And as soon as I found out I made a mistake, I began to file legislation to repeal the tax. Unfortunately, I couldn't convince my colleagues to follow me. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I congratulate you on your willingness to speak out on these controversial issues, but I'm very curious as to what your relationship with the Florida Republican Party is at this time.
I don't know what it is. And to be honest with you, I don't care what it is. I'm a Republican because I believe in less government. We all do. I believe also in giving that person the opportunity to build and grow and prosper. As I call myself, I'm a Ronald Reagan Republican who, in my opinion, would not probably win a primary in some states because of his beliefs as well. Jeb Bush, I think, said it very eloquently, and I'll paraphrase, but he pretty much said that he didn't think Ronald Reagan would be welcomed in the party either because of the direction our party is going. There are many in our party that don't like the direction it's going, believe me, but they cannot speak up, unfortunately. And I'll give you a perfect example, Medicaid expansion. My introduction said that I was the only Republican on the House floor that voted for expansion. In fact, I offered the amendment. But unfortunately, my colleagues didn't support it, but many of them wanted to, but they didn't want to go against leadership. Peter. I'm being nice to you, Peter. I'm letting you ask a question.
Representative Senator, Representative Tax Collector. Charlie Crist lost 5 more votes than Alex Zink.
Yes.
The Republicans, even in battleground districts like our friend Chris Rolls and Chris Latvell, they won those House seats. There's basically not a conservative, or excuse me, Democratic white male left in the South. What's the incentive for the Republicans to take a stand on any of the issues you're talking about when they have won election after election after election?
If Republicans, Peter, believe that they won because of their message of not expanding Medicaid, of wanting to privatize prisons, not worrying about people's electric bill or their insurance bill, then they're going to be on the wrong team, and they're going to be. Hurt, in my opinion, big time for future elections. Look, it was the Sprouls and the Latvalas that realized right away that they needed to file legislation to take on Duke Energy. They got the message. They understand it. Because otherwise, they realize that they're not going to get reelected in the future. If all they do is just be sheep and follow leadership in Tallahassee. Those in leadership, like Chris Afuli, comes from a very safe district. Not all of his members, or future Speaker Richard Cochran's members, come from safe districts. There are many reasons why Charlie Crist didn't win that night. There are many reasons why Republicans won those seats. But it is my prediction in 2 years or 4 years from now, You will see many of those seats challenged heavily by the Democrats if Republicans forget the little guy and gal. And thus far, I see that some of them, the newbies, are not forgetting the little guy and gal. I'll let you pick. None of them live in my district, so I don't care. But right there.
Right here. You probably just outlined that that's the reason why you want to run the bill. I know. Once in, and you got out, but still, well, I got out, but I didn't get it. But you got something. So I don't. You're saying what most people feel.
Yes, sir.
And I don't care whether they're educated on the subject or not. Sit around and talk. That's what they're talking about. You're the ideal candidate. So what would it take to get you to run?
Oh, wow. That's a great, great question. And right now, I'm the happiest tax collector in the state of Florida. You know, my mom always said, when other people are writing checks out to you, you've been successful. And that's what happens every day at the Pasco County Tax Collector's Office. Yes, ma'am. Right up here. Yes, ma'am.
Where did you get the courage to go against what your party wanted you to do?
Thank you for the question. I think I always had that courage. My mom instilled in that to us, truly instilled in that in me, especially as the youngest, especially after dropping out of school at 15. I think whether, you know, as far as the courage you talk about, I think it's more whether it was courage or coming to the realization that the people back in my district can no longer tolerate what was happening in Tallahassee, can no longer tolerate allowing the Duke Energies get away with what they were getting away with, could no longer tolerate the insurance industry doing what they were doing to my constituents, could no longer tolerate the way the special interests were running controlling the halls in Tallahassee. Have we ever heard from Tallahassee about what can we do? What can we do to help the little guy and gal out? I always challenge leadership. I always challenge Governor Scott as a legislator, come on down to Holiday, Florida. Come on down to Port Richey, Florida. I'll introduce you to people who are wondering how they're going to pay their electric bill this month, how they're going to pay their premium when they get the bill from their insurance company. Every time we saw the governor, he was in an area where people were doing pretty good. I didn't see him in some areas where people were struggling. And I do that today. Governor, come on down to Pasco County. I'll take you into areas where people are struggling. Hear their stories. And I think that's where I just developed, if you will, you know, whether you want to call it courage or maybe the independent streak that I needed. Ha ha, gotcha. Yes, sir. Hey, Bob Dillinger.
Bob Dillinger, can you explain how tax collectors can help homeless people get an ID so they can get a job?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Will do. Here in Pinellas County, in Pasco County, we will give an ID to a homeless person at no charge. However, they still must have the documents that are needed in order to get that ID. We will help them in any way possible to get those documents. And at times, we can get those documents at no charge, and we'll make sure they're at no charge, but also get them an ID with getting an exception, if you will, from the state. But we will help in any way any homeless people in these two counties. Pasco and Pinellas has led the charge in providing IDs to homeless people. We're not just doing it for homeless people that may be on the street. Believe it or not, you guys know better than I, we have a lot of homeless students in our schools today. So Pasco County is now working with the school, with our school resource officers, identifying homeless students, those that are in their teens, get them that ID so they can go and get a job. Because without that ID, they are not getting a job. And that's what we're working with in Pasco anyway. So we're doing many things. This is not answering the question, but I just a compliment to Bob Dillinger. Can I do that without you ringing that bell?
Sure.
Great. Bob Dillinger is a public defender. But Bob Dillinger also cares immensely for those who are having a tough time. And you read and hear about it every day. But he came to us in Pasco County and wanted to, as we all did, how can we help those homeless people that need access to health care? County Commission stepped in, worked with him in buying one of the used vehicles here, in mobile vehicles here in Pinellas. Is that right, Bob? Okay, but how are we going to fund it? Well, Bob worked with us, and he was accepting to us giving him the money. We funded the money through the committee that I chaired, making certain that he gets money every year to fund our Pasco Medical Mobile that goes around the county to help those who are homeless and others that don't have access to health care. So Bob is an outstanding public defender, best staff ever, but he also does so many other things. And Bob, I thank you very much, sir, for the good work you do. God bless you. Back there, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
In my lifetime, do you think we'll ever have begin the gerrymandering so that we'll have fair elections?
No, ma'am. Next question. You will never. No, there's always going to be gerrymandering. And I'm going to tell you a quick story. And I know I got 2 minutes, and I'll tell this quickly. They were redoing the districts. Will Weatherford was a chairman of the redistricting committee in the Florida House, chaired all. I came back from committee one day. I was in the Florida Senate. Will Weatherford was sitting there. He said, I need to speak with you. Sure, come on in. It wasn't the speaker at the time, but future speaker, next speaker. Come on in, shut the door. He said, I got to tell you that we're not going to be able to draw the congressional districts that the Senate wants. And I said, why? And he said, because Speaker Cannon at the time wanted to help a sitting congressman and that they were going to have to draw the congressional districts differently to help that sitting congressman. I shook my head in amazement. This was the chairman of the redistricting committee. This was a future Speaker of the House, but he had gotten his orders from the present Speaker, Dean Cannon. This was after an overwhelming majority of people voted this type of stuff should not happen, but it did. And to answer your question, unfortunately, it'll probably never end. Oh, my goodness. Listen, I only put enough money in my thing for 2 hours. Yes, sir. Right there. Is that good?
I'm Warren Eisenhower.
Yes, sir.
I was appalled to read in the. I want to expand on Peter Bob's question to the chief just asked previously. Was appalled to read in the Tampa Bay Times that two people registered Democrats were not going to vote for Chris because he had more negative advertising.
Wow.
Secondly, which is appalling, and in addition, it costs an enormous amount of money to run for public office today. How can we overcome the negative advertising and the enormous amounts of money that it costs for any reasonable person to run for public office?
And I apologize, I don't know. Because, as we know, and I think Peter will tell you as well, that polls were showing that Charlie Crist was probably going to win this election. The daily polling, in fact, And it wasn't until, because the funding or spending was pretty much equal until Rick Scott threw $12 million of his own money in the race in the last, 10 days, 12 days, something like that. Bought 10,000 commercials. The only thing, in my opinion, you can do is try and educate the voter more. Now, I'm not saying they're not educated, but encourage them, ask them to please look at what the candidates stand for and not what you're seeing on TV. That's the only thing you can do. But when you have that much negative, I think what negative advertisement does, and I think what Rick Scott was successful in doing, was reducing the amount or suppressing the amount of people that were actually going to come out and vote, unfortunately. And I think he was successful in doing that, and because of that. I mean, real quickly, I know I'm gonna jump off my 2 minutes, okay? No? Okay. Ask another question. I'll throw it in there. How about out there? The other one. We'll get them both. How are we doing?
Okay. Senator, one of the things in the last couple of decades that have been kind of sponsored by the political parties has been to keep elected officials, and these are constitutional officials, in the parties from endorsing or contributing to or helping a member of a different party. As a constitutional officer, don't you think that should not be allowed?
Can you repeat that question for me?
The members of the Republican Executive Committee and Democratic Executive Committees and the State Committee sign oaths that they will not support a member of an opposing party.
Right.
This has all happened over the last 20 years, frankly.
Yes.
Don't you think because these are constitutional offices that this is unlawful?
Well, one is, as a constitutional officer, I never signed an oath like that. The members of the Executive Committee, the respective executive committees, Republicans and Democrat executive committees, they signed an oath because they are within the Republican Party. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, you are a precinct committee person in this precinct for the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. But as a constitutional officer, I never signed an oath saying that I would only support a particular party. And that is not required by any elected official other than a party official within that respective party. This gentleman here?
Last question.
Last question. Make it good.
Hello, I'm Leonard Schmidt. My question is, a few years ago, Floridians passed a constitutional amendment to increase the Florida minimum wage.
Yes.
And now the federal wage basically caught up to that, but it is adjusted for inflation. My question is, what is your personal opinion on an increasing minimum wage? And what is your opinion on doing it through another constitutional initiative?
First of all, I wholeheartedly support increasing the minimum wage, whether it be at one time or over a period of time. It needs to get to $10 an hour as quickly as possible. It has to. People in my community, it was a great article, a column, by the way, that was on PBS, that you might want to go and check, about how it was done by a billionaire, in fact, that said that we need to address the middle class and how many of them are just having a huge problem because of the salaries they're getting, and they're not even getting the overtime. It's as he described it, unless something changes quickly, the middle class is just going to go away. But with that said, real quickly, when I became tax collector of Pasco County, although the public servant before me did an outstanding job, what I found out was the people in the tax collector's office were truly, absolutely, ridiculously underpaid, doing a fabulous job. They were starting at $9.25 an hour. $9.25 an hour. And people who were there for 5, 6, 7, 8 years were barely making over $10 an hour. Change that immediately. Now, after a year that I've been there, the starting salary is $11 an hour, and within the next year it goes to $12 an hour. And everyone else has gone up. Everyone else has gone up. Now, is it, in my opinion, are they paid enough? I don't believe so. And I tell them that every time I see them. And I tell them, though, we're trying to get it up even higher. You've got to set an example and you've got to show leadership. And do I believe it should be a constitutional amendment? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, whether you'd get 60% or not. But certainly it's got to take leadership within, I believe, those who are public servants and, more importantly, in the private sectors to begin the trend. Thank you. Am I done? Thank you so very much. God bless you all. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Where's the mug?
You've just heard the former President Pro Tem of the Florida Senate, member of the Florida House, and now Pasco County Tax Collector Mike Fasano.
We love taking the politicians to lunch.
Did you get it?
My cup runs over. Now, I'm sure the January 8th, we have Mayor Rick Kreisman coming to speak here, and the winner of the Fang and Claw, oh, there it is, Harvard politician up for lunch. Where did you get the courage? Beverly Mittman.
We've come to the end of our live broadcast on RadioSt.Pete.com from the St. Pete Yacht Club, today's Suncoast Tiger Bay Club luncheon with former state senator and member of the Florida House, Mike Fasano, the tax collector in Pasco County, a hard-hitting presentation for sure. This is our final Tiger Bay Club broadcast of 2014. We'll be back here at the St. Pete Yacht Club January 8th for a presentation by the mayor of the city of St. Petersburg, Rick Kreisman. You'll hear it live on RadioSt.Pete.com and then in our audio archive. This program as well will be archived on RadioSt.Pete.com later today. So for now, we wish you a good Tuesday afternoon. Thank you for listening. From the St. Pete Yacht Club on the Bayfront in St. Petersburg, Florida, this is Joe Bordeaux. Thanks for listening. We return you now to our studio.
Honey, you are a rock upon which I stand.